You are listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting, Youngstown, New York, the CJ Mars Radio Network.
The Paranormal News Insider from ParanewsInsider.com. Presented by CJMarsRadio.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for November 24th, 2015, and episode 241. And again, this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, in this hour, we're going to include UFO-seeking satellite needs your support. Man loses nearly $1 million to two psychics. The Aflocalypse rears its ugly head once again. Spiders take over Memphis, and the Pope. And the Pope is back. The Pope comes probably once every 2 years here to the Paranormal News Insider. The Pope rations out a miracle. And don't forget a special announcement concerning the Paranormal News Insider for the entire month of December coming up a little later. Plus, as I mentioned, in the last hour, conventions, conferences. If I have a little time, I'll touch on that to see if any are in your neck of the woods next year. And we'll also talk the Book of the Week, which is a really interesting one. Interesting in the fact that the amount of research in this book, and this book is relatively unknown. It was unknown to me until I discovered it. Now, I kind of forgot to mention this. In the Book of the Week last week in Monster Hunt, the Guide to Cryptozoology, there's actually a segment in there called The Beast of Bodmin. And the Beast of Bodmin is a big cat. The big cat, it's also known as Bob, is seen in Dover, England. So there are at least one, not the ones that were in the story that I mentioned in the November 17th episode are in the book, but a similar one with a large black creature is in this book. So tonight, November 24th, 2015, episode 241. This week's news is brought to you by the International Cryptozoology Museum located in Portland, Maine. It's the world's only cryptozoology museum. And the International Cryptozoology Museum opened in 2003 and contains rare and original items collected by Lauren Coleman, the director of the museum. Visit the International Cryptozoology Museum at 11 Avon Street in downtown Portland, Maine. And for more information, please visit cryptozoologymuseum.com. And my book, Handbook for the Amateur Cryptozoologist, can be bought at that bookstore. Well, it can also be bought online at my website as well, briandparsons.com. But I'll tell you what, if I'm ever in Maine, I'm going there and I'm buying my own book from that bookstore or from the museum. I think it would be really, really cool. So what's coming up today? Well, cryptid news, I got nothing. Nothing in the cryptid news this week. Unfortunately, I think we had a lot of news last week, a couple of big cat sightings. And so far, no new information about the thylacine that was seen. Nothing new about that story. But in UFO news, an interesting story this week. If you can't beat them, join them. Well, that's the plans for a low Earth orbit satellite that is underway that will hopefully track and photograph potential UFOs. So this is a non-government sponsored craft, a satellite that is going to be launched in space by people who don't have, well, they have an agenda, I guess, because they want to find UFOs, but they're not controlled by the government, at least as far as we know. It's private funded. Privately funded venture, and it's going to be funded by people like you. That's right, by you. The CubeSat for Disclosure project is seeking funding through crowdsourcing, and donors will get an interesting array of options for their donations. And the satellite project seeks to raise a minimum of $50,000 for a lone Cube satellite to be launched into space. I think this is pretty unique. As far as crowdsourcing, you know, people go on and you donate a certain amount of money. And if you donate a certain amount of money, you get gifts or you get things that tie into this, the crowdsourcing thing. And sometimes it's just for, you know, send Johnny to a concert or pay my medical bills or help me sue somebody. But occasionally you'll get a cool crowdsourcing thing like this that you can help make a difference and help make a change. And the last one I've seen about UFOs was last year when MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network, was seeking crowdsourcing funding to revamp their website to get a brand new UFO reporting website up because the one that they have, yeah, it's pretty outdated. They've been using it for quite a long time. It's really not a really great search engine. It limits you to a certain amount of search cues at a time, and they really could have used that money. But they kind of screwed up a little bit in the way that they went about it. And one of the similar things is happening to this one as well, which I'll wrap up the story with. But before we get there, again, $50,000 is what they're seeking for donations. And the CubeSat kit alone, just the satellite kit and to get it into space, costs $40,000. But the team will get a 50% discount. So they're paying just a little less than $20,000 for the satellite kit. Another $9,000 is for a NanoCam kit, which they will turn into two cameras by using mirrors. So instead of one picture, they'll get two, I guess, but it'll be interesting to see how that works. $4,575 is for a scintillation counter, which will measure for radiation in the surrounding area near the satellite. $12,000 will be for the VHF downlink and UHF uplink full duplex transceiver to communicate and control the satellite. And $4,800 will be for a deployable antenna system. So essentially that means this CubeSat will be looking for unidentified flying objects by searching the surrounding area in low orbit for high radiation readings and will be able to take photographs. Well, really one photograph, but split in half by a mirror. So it's taking pictures in two different directions. Not sure how much of an area it's really going to cover. Now, if the team raises more money than the $50,000, they also hope to add a radar unit to the CubeSat, which would be really interesting to add another dynamic of search on the satellite. Donors who give $50 will merely get a T-shirt, but the T-shirt's pretty cool. The T-shirt shows a picture of the CubeSat and says, quote, "I launched my own CubeSat to low Earth orbit. Sorry, what were you saying?" Unquote. $100 or more will actually give you instant access to CubeSat data and that T-shirt. Donors who give $500 or more will get the opportunity to remotely log into the satellite and issue commands, such as take a photograph. Hopefully they don't have one that says crash down to Earth. They will also obviously have instant access to data and get that T-shirt. Well, $1,000 or more will get you to the ability to have a stamp-sized name or logo put on the CubeSat, as well as meet the disclosure guests. Well, these guests include MUFON members, again, Mutual UFO Network, the largest UFO organization in the United States, as well as Travis Waltman for a special meeting on disclosure, plus all of the other previously mentioned perks, including the T-shirt. For $5,000, you get to be on the team. You will get to participate in the building of the CubeSat, meet the disclosure guests, and of all of the other perks, and yes, that T-shirt. For $10,000, you'll get to have your own CubeSat. Yes, you get your own satellite for $10,000. That's a deal. with your own name or logo as large as a CubeSat itself. Let me check one of my credit cards. I might have room on it. And we'll have full control plus all of the other goodies, including the T-shirt. The CubeSat team includes Dave Cote, the project manager and software engineer, Matthew Mills, an aerospace engineer, Gianna Young, the design consultant, Marcel Cote, a chemist, and Mark Richfield, who serves as the media consultant. The satellite will be launched by the Interorbital Systems, and the campaign ends in 44 days from now. I think that's January 7th. And again, they need $50,000 to get this thing up in the sky. So far, the last I checked was this afternoon, where they raised $560. That's right, $560 from 9 backers, which is around 1% of the total needed. Now, this story has gone viral. It's got a lot of interest from a lot of communities, but $560, ouch. Usually these campaigns are successful if they generate a large chunk of funding within the first few days of the campaign. Typically, those that advertise ahead of time and generate interest prior to the launch can generate a large amount of donors out of the gate. When others see this, see a lot of people donating money, they want to also be a part of that successful campaign and are more willing to donate. So again, this is similar. I mentioned the MUFON project to redo their website and their information on data and sightings. Now, they fell flat too, but they broadcast theirs in about this, well, a little earlier than this time in November. I think the second week of November. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm kind of putting my money towards Christmas right now. I'm not really worried about donating my money to a UFO organization. You know, the red kettles haven't hit the stores yet, but I'm sure that's going to be right after Thanksgiving. And, you know, a lot of organizations are asking for donations, even when money is tight. But I think launching a major campaign like that around that time of the year isn't really very helpful when, again, people are trying to focus their money on other things, on friends and family. And with MUFON, they really had little or no fanfare. They really just launched this campaign out of nowhere. And it wasn't really viral. It was only within the UFO community. They didn't really seek out anybody outside of the UFO field, as barely through outside of MUFON, for that matter. I mean, I advertised it because I heard the story, because I'm not really a MUFON member, but I'm very close to MUFON and watch that organization very closely. Highly respect that organization for some of the things that they do. But that campaign fell flat because of those things that I mentioned. And unfortunately, it looks as if this one here is also going to fail because of some of these problems. So the CubeSat for Disclosure project, we'll see what happens in the next couple of weeks if they make it by the beginning of the year or not. Probably not, unless some major donations are made within the next couple of days. And it's rather sad to see that unfortunately, it's probably not going to make it. It's a pretty cool idea. I think it really is. I think it I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's really going to find anything out there. But it would be interesting to see the project actually take off, no pun intended, to see it actually get up off the ground and to according to the website, right now I'm looking at it, $560 from 9 backers with 43 days left. Now, supposedly it's a flexible goal, which means this campaign will receive all funds raised even if it does not reach its goal. So looks as if they're going to donate the money anyway and they're going to get this thing going. But I don't know. I'd like to have that T-shirt, to be honest with you. I think it'd be pretty cool. But with this story, one of my concerns – and one concern that's not really addressed in all of their point of sale kind of stuff and their video and everything that they have is that a low Earth orbiting satellite, it tends not to stay up in orbit for more than a few months. And that's by design because that's they're in a low Earth orbit. It takes quite a bit of energy to keep them up in that orbit, and due to a lot of things that happen in the low Earth orbit, again, these satellites don't really stay up there that long, and again, they're designed to fall back to Earth and end up burning up on their way back to Earth. So maybe that's the concern that people are having. Do I donate $50 and get this T-shirt and this thing burns up in June of next year? It's still, nothing really lasts forever up there in orbit. And again, I think it is worth it. I haven't donated any money yet. I did to MUFON's thing, but theirs didn't go through and I got my money back. So it didn't really count towards the actual donation. But I don't know. I'm just like everyone else. If I see it start to build up and I see, it hit $10,000 or $15,000, $20,000 in the next couple of days, I'd be willing to throw in $50 and get a shirt. It's kind of an expensive shirt, but it'd be cool to be a part of that project when it does launch next year. And if they did discover something, then hey, you could claim to be a part of UFO discovery, and you can make history. But again, I'll keep my eye on the story, and we'll see how it goes. And if you want to keep an eye on that story, in case I don't talk about it here, I may mention it through social media. So don't forget, you can follow me on Facebook at facebook.com/Paranews Insider, on Twitter at Paranews Insider, as well as on Google+. And you can listen to the archives on Podbean at podbean.com, actually pni.podbean.com, and iTunes. It's everywhere. And you can find links to all that stuff at paranewsinsider.com. And if you want to get a hold of me, again, through any of these social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, I'm there. All you got to do is message me, and I'll get back to you as soon as I can. And also through old-fashioned email at insider@paranewsinsider.com. And if you go to paranewsinsider.com, I also have a contact page set up. You can just type in a bunch of stuff in the box and hit send. And let me know what's on your mind. If you have any news I'm not covering, and if I'm not covering it for a particular reason and I've heard about it, I'll let you know why. And we can talk about it. And maybe I'll put it on the Paranormal News Insider. And if it's something I've never heard, I'll get it on here for you. And I'll do some research and I'll dig into that story for you as well. So, ghost news. We didn't have any ghost news last week. Ghost news is usually hit and miss on here on the Paranormal News Insider. And this one was such a complicated story that, when I first read this, I was just confused because, again, when I put together these stories, I don't just look at the link. When somebody posts something on The Anomalist, Unexplained Mysteries, or any of these other news outlets, that all they do is just basically plug in the news. And again, you can find those two, The Anomalist and Unexplained Mysteries. You can find all that generated on my website at paranewsinsider.com. You can click on the news feed tab at the top and get both of those on one website at once. So you can see the news stories that I'm searching, but those aren't the only sources I use. But again, when one of those stories makes it on those news outlets, I don't just read just that story. And I'll read that to see, to kind of gauge interest into whether or not I'm interested in covering the story. But from there, I'll look at another source, and I'll look at another source, and I'll look at as many sources as I can that are independent, because a lot of times people just kind of copy and paste and put a link at the bottom, saying this is covered by soandsonews.com. And, that's not really beneficial, because a lot of times it's like the telephone game. Sometimes somebody will add a sentence or two, and then somebody else adds a sentence or two. And after a couple of days, these stories have kind of morphed into something that they're not. So I do the research. I go back and I look for the original news sources when the story broke, as well as updates, because sometimes, you may get one at 9 o'clock in the morning, and then you'll get one at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. There's a lot more information that comes later in the day or a day after or another day after people are contacted and more information is discovered. So I do a lot of research for these stories. And this story itself I probably read about 7 or 8 articles because the information was really confusing. And at least 2 of the news outlets got the information wrong. And from really doing research on the story, I found out some of the information and got it correct. And so therefore, this story is going to be a little long, but it's well worth it because this story is – it's kind of a sad story, but it's almost like a – gosh, what do I call it? What are those TV shows? Lifetime Channel show. It's just sad, but it's interesting and it's frustrating as well. And you might have heard about the story or maybe even read about it. Some of the details, again, were a bit confusing, and it took me quite a bit of time, but I did sort it out the best I could. A man named Niall Rice, a 33-year-old internet consultant from Brooklyn, New York, contacted a psychic in 2013 in an effort to be reunited with a woman who had broken up with him after a short relationship. Seems easy so far, right? Well, Mr. Rice had earned hundreds of thousands of dollars in internet search engine optimization, drawing traffic to websites in exchange for commissions. He was raised in a poor family and had planned to buy his mother a house in England. However, Niall also had social anxiety issues and had been drinking heavily and using drugs. He then checked himself into a rehab center in Arizona. He met a woman named Michelle, who was also a patient at the clinic while he was undergoing treatment. Well, the two seemed to hit it off, and when they left rehab, they enjoyed a couple of weeks together. Mr. Rice stated, quote, "We had such a strong connection. It was unbelievable. I loved her deeply," unquote. Well, unfortunately, Michelle broke off the relationship after she checked herself back into rehab after overdosing on pills. Well, Mr. Rice agreed that it was probably for the best that they break up, and he came back to Brooklyn and tried to get on with his life. I swear, when you're thinking about this story, it just sounds like a Lifetime movie. It just sounds made up, but this is real. However, one day, he was depressed, and he came upon the psychic shop on Delancey Street, where he met a psychic named Brandy. Now, Brandy gave him some useful information, and she cut out what was going on with him. She kind of unraveled his mystery, and he was really taken by this. He thought, wow, this could be the real deal here. And he was charged $2,500 for that visit. But he felt like Brandy could help him get Michelle back, as she seemed to know quite a bit about him and his story. So Mr. Rice ended up paying the psychic over $149,000, including a $40,000 ring from Tiffany's. Now, why the ring? Well, the ring was said to ward off evil spirits. Okay, when you get done laughing, I'll continue. And was said to eventually be returned to him and would be used as an engagement ring. So she kept it and would supposedly return it to him. Okay. He had even spent his birthday with the psychic and had steak with her parents. But he wasn't satisfied with the psychic's work, since he had traveled to California to meet up with Michelle and ended up having an argument. So he felt like, well, maybe the psychic isn't as good as I thought. So what did he do? He did what any rational, love-stricken man would do. He went to another psychic. This one was in Times Square in New York City, and she promised Mr. Rice that he would be reunited with his lost love. Priscilla Kelly Del Maro, 26, who calls herself Christina, would take Mr. Rice for a ride for over 20 months and slowly dried him of money. He kept his visits to the psychics largely to himself, but eventually mentioned Christina to a roommate at where he was living, a woman named Lauren Horton. Quote, "He seemed like a normal guy," Mrs. Horton, 34, a graphic designer, said on about the story, "but his faith in Christina and the money he was paying for her was something else altogether. "It was insane to me," Miss Horton said. "I told him many times he was out of his mind. He was convinced that if he didn't pay for her, the work she was doing for him, bad things would happen to him," unquote. And she likened his continued visits to the psychic to an addiction, which I think is a pretty important thing to keep in mind here, because he was suffering from alcohol and drug abuse. And after seeking counseling from that, that's when he became obsessed with getting back with Michelle and paying money to psychics for that help. But that's where the story gets a little twisted. It gets a little weird. I mean, this could be, like I said, a Lifetime movie already, just the way it is. And Hollywood could write an ending, happy ending or sad ending. You know, maybe she discovers or he discovers that she's, murderous or whatever. I don't know. The story, Hollywood could come up with any kind of ending, but Hollywood could not come up with this ending, the reality of the story. In February of 2014, he wanted to see Michelle or wanted to get updates on her and logged into Facebook to catch up with her. Well, on her page, he saw RIP, rest in peace. Michelle had died of what is thought to be of a drug overdose. So, well, one would think, well, that's the end of the story, right? He's never going to find her. Well, wrong. Mr. Rice said he had just paid Christina about $90,000 that she said was needed to build a bridge of gold in another dimension to trick an evil spirit that was haunting Michelle. Well, he called her and told Christina that Michelle was dead. Well, Christina said, "Don't believe it. If you believe it, it's true." And she said that she could help get Michelle back. Gross, right? Well, not really digging up a corpse or anything here, but a reincarnated Michelle. Ah, a new Michelle. Okay. Well, that's when things really got worse, as Mr. Rice ended up sleeping with Christina. Oops. And again, this sounds like some kind of Lifetime movie, but again, this is according to statements and court documents. This is the information that I'm bringing to you, sorting out the some of the misinformation from some of these stories. The one-time fling may have cost him any chance of getting any of his money back. But as the story goes on, Mr. Rice moved out to California, but Christina continuously emailed him. Christina told him that she was broke because she had no time for other clients. And Mr. Rice was quoted as being told, "She was homeless. She had lost everything for me. I believed she lived in a church." Well, he met and dated a woman who Christina led him to believe was the new Michelle. I don't think that's quite how it works. But anyway, he questioned her, looking for common traits, and he said, "I was being weird," and the relationship ended. Well, that's kind of when he came to his senses and hired a private investigator and pressed charges against psychic Christina. In all, Mr. Rice spent $713,975 on the two psychics. Christina will be sentenced to 4 years of probation at a hearing scheduled for January 26th, according to the terms of her plea agreement. She will have served 8 months in jail. Miss Del Maro, answering yes to a series of questions from Justice Larry Stephen in State Supreme Court in Manhattan, admitted taking $557,411 from Mr. Rice to reunite him with the woman named Michelle. She also agreed to a confession of judgment, meaning that Mr. Rice is entitled to any of her assets. But her lawyer, Jeffrey Sikowski, said that she had no property or money to pay restitution. So this pretty much means that Mr. Rice will never see a dime from her at all. Well, Christina was smart, and she never put the money she got from him into a bank account, which could have been seized by police when he pressed charges. So she obviously knew what she was doing and kind of planned this out in advance. And it, well, kind of worked out for her. And Mr. Rice is now broke. Last week, Mr. Rice said he wanted to return to England and said, quote, I'm trying to get it together, unquote, but acknowledged that he had been drinking again, including the day of the interview. Quote, I don't know if I want to make money again. I'm scared to, unquote. I want to go home, but I want to see this through, unquote. As for Christina, according to her lawyer, she would no longer be able to work as a psychic. To do so would be quite likely be a violation of her parole. Well, it sounds crazy, but many psychics prey on people like Mr. Rice who are down and out and desperate for help, as well as for someone to give them guidance. So in the story, you know, when we hear about this stuff, we'd kind of want to blame the guy. You know, how could he be so stupid? Why would you give all that money? Why would you do that? How could you be so stupid? You know, what's wrong with you? But in reality, you have to blame the con man. Now, a con man is essentially, well, the con and con man actually stands for confidence, because a con man or a con woman in this case gives you confidence that they can deliver something that no one else can. They do this by providing information or know-how or something that makes this person feel that they're very connected to their story, they're connected to you as a person, and you trust them, obviously, with every dime you have. And that's unfortunately what's happened here in this story. And I want to mention here that you're listening to WCJV Digital Broadcasting out of Youngstown, New York. And this is the Paranormal News Insider with your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. Now, to kind of ramp up that story, I'll give a personal view on this. One of my first jobs I had, gosh, I can't remember what year this is, probably back 1998 or so, 98 or 99. I worked with a person. She was a manager. I worked for Burger King, and she was a manager at Burger King. And she'd been really distraught. She'd been missing some work. She'd been acting strangely, and she finally confided in a friend of mine and said that she had lost all of her money to a psychic. You know, she was trying to find her way in life, and she'd had a lot of personal problems. And she was so embarrassed. She felt stupid. She couldn't believe it happened to her. And she was a pretty smart person. And that kind of scared me. You know, back then I really didn't know much about the psychic game and the con game. And it made me a little wary of psychics back in that time. And that was still a time that I was learning about parapsychology and learning about all this stuff. And kind of gave me a sour taste in my mouth about psychics. But You can't blame the person, because anybody can fall prey to this. If you're in the right position and you're there at the right time to a psychic, if you're down on your luck, you're going through personal problems, you're looking for a way to change your job or a way to find somebody, a lost love or something, you're very susceptible. And these psychics are very good at discerning that information. And again, it can happen to anybody. And I've seen it happen to at least two people that I know. One person, she was kind of a close friend. I knew her very well and was very surprised to find out that she was taken advantage of monetarily like that. And the psychics are smart. They kind of know what you can afford. They're very good at what's called cold reading, where they can look at you and kind of have an idea based on your clothing, your job, how you act, pretty much what you make. And they kind of accordingly, since we all tend to spend pretty much 90% of what we make or more, they can kind of figure out how much money they can con out of you at a time, and that will force you to figure out ways to get more money. And you know, then the rabbit hole just gets bigger and bigger, and you fall deeper and deeper in debt. And it's a game. It just seems like the more money you give, the more money you need to give. And unfortunately, in the case of this gentleman, he was taken for almost $1 million, almost three quarters of $1 million. That's a lot of money. And it's sad that he's now afraid to make money. Pretty scary. Well, anyway, hope that kind of explained all that. If you do read the story, again, for the fifth time, it's like a Lifetime movie. It was amazing when I was putting it together, just reading it, thinking, wow, how is all this stuff really happening? It was a really interesting story. So in other news, I mentioned at the top of the show, the Afflocalypse. Now, if you're not a fan of the Paranormal News Insider, you may have never heard that term before. Now, the Afflocalypse was a very popular thing, and I'll mention it toward the end of the show what that means as far as the show is concerned. But the Afflocalypse is essentially when a few years back a large die-off occurred, and then another large die-off occurred, and it seemed like large die-offs were occurring all over the planet, and it scared people to death, thinking that it was end time, something was going on. And each individual event, when looked at individually, as it should, was nothing more than just a small elimination, a small die-off of large groups of animals, which is natural. It happens all the time. But some of these stories, like the one I'm about to mention, were a little bit weird. They didn't really make sense. And so far, to this particular story, there's no known cause. Some of these stories during the Great Afflocalypse, there wasn't really any known, obviously not singular explanation, but some of the stories did not have explanations, although some of them were pretty obvious that were just natural die-offs. Now, is the Afflocalypse returning? Around 700 dead fish were found along a stretch of area south of Perth, Australia. Now, Perth is on the southwest side of Australia. Around 600 fish were found near the Garden Island and a causeway near Careening Bay. The bay is part of an island, the Garden Island, and the island is connected to the mainland by a causeway. A Garden Island also helps create Cockburn Sound, where another 100 fish were found dead on a beach near the industrial suburb of Perth known as the City of Naval Base. The concerning thing here about this story is that the fish were of varying species. Now, again, it's quite common for one type of species to suddenly die off in an area, which is a natural process. It happens all the time. And, you know, when Paranormal News stories started talking about the Afflocalypse, all these stories kept coming and were being magnified week after week, month after month. And even now, they're still being talked about as unnatural things, although this one here is weird. But a mass die-off of many varieties of life indicates something is wrong. Now, it could be something environmental. Again, this is a industrial area. But when looking at the number of animals, it seems like the pink snapper makes up the majority of the fish that were found dead in both areas. Samples of the fish and water are already being studied to find out what is the cause of the die-off or what is the likely cause, and if there are any preventions or solutions that can be put into effect to stop future die-offs in this and other areas. And the weird thing about this story is doing some research, it's also concerning that in 2010, this area also encountered a crab die-off, which has since impacted crab fishing in that entire region. Weird. So again, this is one of those stories that we'll have to keep an eye on to see what's going on with that particular story and if there's going to be any kind of solution found and if that solution is really going to be in the mainstream. And in the chat room, I provided a link there. You can check out the link to that story. Not really a whole lot to it. But before you get carried away with that one, we're going to talk about another one that's kind of blowing up virally. People are freaking out about this one. Science organizations are freaking out about this one too. And it's about an area of Memphis, Tennessee that's becoming overrun with spiders. Oh boy, I think everybody just lifted their feet up off the floor. A large section in northern Memphis particularly around May Street and Chelsea Avenue, are covered in a large spider web, which is measured to be around a half mile long. Residents are panicking and swatting and squashing spiders as fast as they can to save their children and the city from being overrun by spiders. Okay, well, it's not that bad. The webs are covering the ground, trees, cars, houses, and everything in their path. Memphis Zoo curator Steve Reichling says that the event needs to be studied and understood how it happened, but also states that this is an indication that all is right with nature, or at least the spider population in that area. He says that this is probably a dispersal from a local field or a meadow where the spiders would have been conducting their normal work unknown to people, but something has caused them to literally spill out in the streets. It's kind of a creepy story. And again, it's a natural thing. It's a natural animal thing, but it's being covered in the paranormal news quite a bit. And hopefully it doesn't take on a life of its own. And that's why I'm providing you with the rational information here in case it starts spreading on Facebook and elsewhere and the story gets misconstrued, which can kind of happen every now and again. Believe it or not, not everything you read on the internet is real. Huh. That's kind of the basis for this entire show here. And one of my last stories here that I want to talk about is might be a little bit of a controversial topic. I don't know, but I'm going to talk about it. And hopefully I don't upset anybody by talking about this in the way that I'm going to talk about it, because it has some religious tones. But it's kind of all in the way the story is being promoted. Now, this is about the Pope, which the Pope has appeared in a few Paranormal News Insider stories, usually about miracles. And again, he's in the news again for another miracle. Now, this story starts on the streets of Philadelphia back on September 26th of this year, when one-year-old Gianna Marcianatio, easy for me to say, Marcia Antonio, was rushed to the passing Pope, who was poisonous popsicle, who was popsicle, I should say, by bodyguard Domenico Gianni. So this little girl got rushed up to the front when the Pope was sitting there in his little Pope mobile. Well, he doesn't want me to say that, but that's what it is. The Pope leaned over and quickly planted a kiss on the baby girl's forehead. This is a YouTube video. It's a famous picture. It's been on dozens of news articles all over the place. Now, Gianna had been suffering from a rare inoperable brain tumor since birth. Her blood cells attacked her brainstem weeks after birth, and surgery is not an option. Less than 2 months after meeting the Pope, the family reported that doctors found the tumor had shrunk to a point where they could no longer tell where the edges of it were. It was truly a miracle. That's their words, not mine. In her first MRI since getting the miracle moisture on top of her head, her parents said she's come to life and is thriving. Quote, last year was about living in honor of her, Joey Masi Antonio said. Now we are going to live with her. Unquote. He said, he also said, quote, I think this is all from God. The Pope is a messenger from God, unquote. Well, it's hard to try and rationalize a feel-good story like this. I mean, you can't help but cheer for a girl who's basically written off by science and doctors, says she's going to die. You know, they didn't expect her to live, to even make it to be a year old. And here she meets the Pope, and it looks like she's going in the right direction. It's kind of hard to kind of poke holes in the story or kind of rationalize it. But you kind of have to. Is the Pope really responsible for the baby's sudden health, which is what is indicated by her parents and these news stories? Now, Gianna endured 7 brain surgeries and 5 rounds of chemotherapy before doctors determined she had a rare disorder called systemic juvenile xanthogranomula. Right, xanthogranomula. I'm not really good at pronouncing these long words, but I do the best I can. She was given no chance to live when she was born, says Joey, her father. We were told, go home and enjoy the final weeks with your daughter, unquote. Further, the father told ABC 6, quote, we did all the things that no parent should have to do. We planned funerals. We made arrangements, unquote. And again, it's hard to argue with the work of God, but we need to point out that his family had also received some of the best medical care since day one, and her health is more than likely due to the care and work of chemotherapy and cutting-edge medicine, which had been administered since day one. Gianna is not out of the woods yet. She's not completely healed, and she's still due for chemotherapy treatments in the future. And the tumor has also paralyzed part of her face, and there's no word on whether or not that is getting any better as well. So what's the controversial part? Well, I think if the Pope did create this miracle, I say he should be arrested. Why? Well, why should this divine intervention be set aside for families who were able to pay a lot of money to be able to visit the Pope? This was a registered event for a select few of people, 2,500. Although Gianna got in free due to being less than 6 years old, her parents paid a hefty price to meet the Pope, and they have certainly profited from the kiss by being on multiple television shows to receiving free goods from Johnson & Johnson, where Joey is an employee. If the Pope is a miracle worker and can heal people on contact, we should have an obligation to heal the sick and dying all over the world. Now, to limit his powers to a select few is not fair to the rest of the world, and he should be punished or at least held accountable for allowing innocent people to die. Some people say it's not the Pope, but it was the faith of the family, as well as who fell in love with Gianna and her story, that helped heal her. Well, okay, that's a bit out there, but the doctors have made no comment on the story, and I'd be willing to bet that they feel a little left out of the miracle part. I mean, where's the kudos for them? That's really what I'm trying to say here. The Pope gets all the credit, and all he did was kiss her head. Is it really a miracle? I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't know. Maybe she might be completely healed one day. But again, we've not heard from the doctors. The doctors have not commented on this. But where's the kudos for them? You know, personally, I have very little faith in hospitals myself. And anyone I've ever met that's been put on any kind of medication seems like they're stuck on it for the rest of their lives and they're never the same. But there should be some credit given to them for all they've done for Gianna. And, you know, hate me for saying all those things, but I just don't think it's fair that the Pope, you know, gets all the credit when modern medicine and money are really the root of this story. And hopefully Gianna continues to get healthy no matter what what is behind it. And hopefully chemotherapy continues to heal her and her tumor continues to get smaller. Now, as teased in last week's Paranormal News Insider, something is coming next week, starting next week, on the Paranormal News Insider that's going to affect the entire month. Now, I was trying to figure out how to go about this. Before I get into the details of that, I'll tell you what it is. It's the return of the top 10 paranormal news stories as heard on the Paranormal News Insider for the year of 2015. I do this every year. I've been doing it since 2008, and it's been a pretty popular segment, and a lot of people really, really enjoy that. They like hearing the top paranormal stories from the entire year, and we kind of rehash some of the stories, and it's a really interesting thing to take time and look back and talk about things. Now, I mentioned the Flockalypse. Now, in 2011 was a huge year for paranormal news stories. The number three story that year was Finding Bigfoot. The TV show made its debut the following year and thought it was going to impact the Bigfoot field. Kind of knew it was going to be good and bad, but you didn't expect it to only impact it kind of negatively. Although it did bring some people into the field, it didn't bring as many as what the TV show Ghost Hunters did. That was the number three story. The number two story was the one I just mentioned, a flockalypse, the number two story of 2011. And that year was also the year of the Jerusalem UFO videos. Now, if you remember those, that was a really interesting case of numerous videos of UFOs shown from different angles that ended up being hoaxes. MUFON discovered this, and a lot of other organizations discovered this. And one thing that that's been brought to my attention before in the past, one of the ways that I do the Paranormal News Insider top 10 paranormal news stories for any year is I like to break it down two at a time each week. That way I'm kind of generating interest and we're talking about these stories and building up toward that number one story. It's kind of like watching a TV show each week. You kind of get that cliffhanger and you want to tune in for the next week. But it's also a way of me still being able to talk about the paranormal news for that particular week. Now, the way I've done it also in the past is when I was on the Grand Dark Conspiracy, or what ended up becoming the Darkest Hours Late Night, when the Paranormal News Insider was just a short 10-minute segment, I would be invited on at the beginning of the year. I was the first guest of the year, and we spent the entire 2 hours talking about the paranormal news of the last year and the top 10. But I find I like it spread out over the month. And one thing people have said to me is, well, how do you know that a story is not going to pop up and take out one of those top 10 stories or be the number one story of the year? Well, starting next week, episode, I guess that's 242 next week, December, the first week of December here, that's actually December 1st next week, I will cover number 10 and number 9 of the top 10 Paranormal News Insider stories. And if anything happens between now and that episode that I think has an impact, and I'll explain kind of how I come up with the top 10 paranormal news stories. If any story is big and it kind of wedges its way in there, I'll fit it in. Now, obviously, if a story is huge, it happens towards the end of the year, it's probably going to be counted towards the next year. And if I have to adjust it, I will, but odds are it won't happen. I've made small adjustments in the past in December, but never any large story that really affected everything. December is actually a pretty slow time of the year, so it is a perfect time to talk about the top 10 paranormal news stories. And how I come up with the top 10 paranormal news stories, basically two simple criteria. There's two things I look for, and it's kind of the same reasons why I talk about these stories each and every week. The first thing is the popularity of the story. Obviously, I talk mostly about stories that are very viral or stories that could potentially become very viral or become confusing in the future. Now, if a story is just popular on Facebook or really merely just popular on paranormal news outlets, it's really not going to gain that much steam and it's probably not going to make the top 10. And if it's very viral on Twitter and Facebook, like stories in the past, such as the Montauk Monster, were extremely popular. And let me think. Montauk Monster, that was 2008. And that was the number one story. And 2008 was a huge year, too. That was a year of the Stephenville UFO tech or Texas UFO and the Georgia Bigfoot hoax. But the Montauk Monster took number one merely because of its popularity. It was so popular that it lasted 2 years. That's how popular that story was. So popularity, if it's obviously in mainstream news and it's carried all throughout the news outlets, it's going to be big. It's going to help it. Secondly, the other thing is the impact that it has on anomalous topics. If it's a story, a lot of stories that I've talked about or that have become number ones were stories that impacted a particular field, such as cryptozoology and ufology as potential findings. So that's what's coming up starting next week, number 10 and number 9 of the top 10 paranormal news stories of 2015. And each week I'll debut two more. So 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2. And on December 29th, we'll have the top two paranormal news stories of 2015. And if anything changes with scheduling, If something were to happen to the show, I will make up all those, and we'll have that the last week of December, because there's only a couple more days, and I really don't think anything big is going to happen those last couple of days. So that's something you have to look forward to. Next week, I'm still putting it together. There's a lot of stories I have, but I encourage you to tune in next week and listen and find out the number 10 and number 9 top paranormal news stories of 2015. And as always, if you have any information about any paranormal conference or convention, let me know at insider@paranewsinsider.com. And you can check out the entire list at paranewsinsider.com, clicking on the events tab at the top. And I want to thank you for listening to tonight's show. And while it might be a little skeptical, this is a must to wade through the stories that are hoaxes, lies, and misinterpretations so that we can discover the truth. And you'll get it here from the inside. From the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.